You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
2 years ago, June 28, 2009 to be exact, there was a coup d'etat in Honduras. The elected president, Manuel Zelaya, was forcibly deported from the country. It is widely believed that the U.S. was involved, with more than a wink and a nudge. In a rigged election several months later, a pro-coup president, Porfirio Lobo, was installed. Despite the pretense of democracy, Latin American governments remained firm in their decision to expel Honduras from the OAS, the Organization of American States. Then, with little public forewarning, late last month, Manuel Zelaya and Porfirio Lobo shook hands and signed an agreement brokered by Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez and Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos. Zelaya returned to Honduras, and the OAS readmitted Honduras as a member of the organization. To discuss these developments, I'm joined on the phone from Honduras by Jesse Freeston. Jesse is an independent video journalist who recently filed from Honduras a series of mini-docs for the Real News Network. Good morning, Jesse, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here.
What was agreed to in the document, the recent document signed by Zelaya and Lobos?
See, that, I mean, even that is a question here in Honduras, because as far as people can tell, there's nothing that was really agreed to that's not already supposedly guaranteed to both Zelaya and the resistance movement in the Constitution. So supposedly what's agreed to is, you know, in the wording of the document, is that Zelaya promises to recognize the current government and stop calling it illegitimate, you know, we assume, because up until that point, he had been, rightfully so, in my opinion, declaring that the government of Porfirio Lobo was elected in sham elections. And, you know, I and myself and many other journalists were here documenting exactly, you know, what a farce those elections were. And you know, he kept that line. So now, as a result of signing this, he's changed his tone and has been talking very well about Lobo and about his regime. So that was the one thing, supposedly, that Zelaya gives. Also, as part of this, it's not in the accord itself, but it was understood that with the involvement of Chavez and of Santos of Colombia, that there was an agreement that by signing this accord, Honduras would be allowed back into the OAS, which is a huge thing for two reasons in this country. I would say two main reasons. The first of which being that it opens up the last, in the days after the coup, a lot of international funding was cut from the IMF, from the World Bank, from the Inter-American Development Bank, from various countries and their aid to the Honduran government. All of that had been restored except for some money from the Inter-American Development Bank, which was contingent on Honduras as being part of the OAS for them to receive those hundreds of millions of dollars. Now that they're back in the OAS, that money is now open again. So that was, you know, a big incentive for the Lobo regime. And the position of countries like Brazil and Venezuela and others had always been that they would never allow Honduras back until Zelaya was safely back in the country. You know, and for people here, that's, for many people here, it's been very disconcerting in the sense that the concept that a return to democracy could be defined simply as the return of the overthrown leader with no power. So you think about the situation of Haiti, where, you know, Aristide has just come back after, I think it was 8 years in exile. So to think that that would be declared, you know, the return of democracy to Haiti just because he can go and live in the home he grew up in or something with no power, no influence. And so this has been very disconcerting for people in Honduras. Other people, you know, look at it and say, okay, it's a trade. We get our leader back in the country, but out of exile, in return for Honduras' return to the OAS, and a lot of people are saying, you know, maybe that's a fair trade. The other reason why it's important for the Lobo regime, in my opinion, and this might be looking a little bit into the future, to be back into the OAS, is because there's regions in this country that could, you know, very likely, particularly the Aguan Valley region, that could very likely open up into armed conflict. There's, you know, daily, almost daily assassinations of campesino leaders in that area, campesinos being small or landless farmers that are trying to reclaim land. And ever since the coup, they've really stepped up their tradition of occupying land that belongs to the richest people in the country, or land that's not being used. And in return, they've faced, you know, massive violence, you know, kidnappings, tortures, assassinations. And it's not that, you know, hard to believe that at some point they might say enough and decide to fight back with weapons. And in that situation, it's important internationally for Honduras to have, for the Honduran government to have the legitimacy to say, you know, this is an armed insurrection that we need to put down, as opposed to a situation like Libya, where the government, you know, internationally is discredited, and the armed insurgency is the one that gets the legitimacy of the world, of those looking in. And so that really, you know, returning to the OAS means that in a situation like that, it's more likely that the outside world will recognize the current government as legitimate and the armed insurrection as something that needs to be eliminated. So I think that is another key point that comes out of the accord. One of the things that supposedly also comes out of the accord is there's a paragraph about human rights where the Lobo regime promises to, and the wording is quite disgusting for those of us that have been here witnessing and documenting the human rights abuses that have happened, is, you know, essentially the wording says that the Lobo regime promises to look into those people who claim to have been victims of human rights abuses. And this idea of claiming, this idea that they can't even admit, you know, that there's more than 100 political dissidents that have been assassinated, more than 200 that are in exile now because of receiving death threats or having been tortured or having been, you know, beaten up or jailed or a number of things, you know, thousands of illegal detentions. I mean, the fact that it's repeatedly repressing people for protesting in the street with tear gas and beatings and jailings and everything. The fact that they can't even get to the point of the Lobo regime, which supposedly represents, you know, the post-coup era, that they can't even recognize that those things happened since the coup, is very terrifying to people, the human rights defenders in this country in particular, and they're particularly worried about the fact that now that Honduras is back in the OAS, there's no more outstanding international levers or, like, points of leverage to put any kind of pressure on this regime to respect human rights. So this is the return to normalcy as far as the international community is concerned. And it was really striking that the only country out of the 33-member OAS board that voted against Honduras' return was Ecuador. It took the position that they would never support Honduras' return until such time as the people that carried out the coup had been punished. And those two main characters that carried out the coup, Roberto Micheletti on the political side of things, the civilian side of things, and Romeo Vázquez Velázquez on the military side of things. Vázquez Velázquez, I should point out, was trained at the U.S. School of Americas, as so many other military leaders that have carried out coups in Latin American history were. I believe he's the 11th now. Romeo Vázquez Velázquez was rewarded by Pepe Lobo as the president of the state telephone company, which is terrifying to people in the resistance movement, because while Vázquez Velázquez was in charge of the military, he sent a letter to all the mayors in the country asking for the contact information of anybody who identified with the resistance movement in their region. And now he's in charge of the state telephone company. So people are just assuming now that the military is listening in on their phone calls. And then on the other side of things, Roberto Micheletti, who was rewarded as a congressman for life. Supposedly, you know, ostensibly, he's being rewarded for having defended the Constitution. Yet at the same time, the position of congressman for life doesn't even exist in the Constitution. And he's the first person ever to receive that. So that's a little brief summary of, you know, the many things that are going on here in Honduras and the impact of this accord.
Well, Jesse, you were talking about those who were fighting for democracy within Honduras. I wonder if we can turn for a second to the National Resistance Front. I know that there are a wide coalition of Honduran grassroots organizations, and that they've been resisting the coup since 2009. What was their reaction to the return of Zelaya?
It was the reaction to the return of Zelaya was quite powerful. You know, to meet him at the airport, it was impossible really to tell how many people were there just because of the setting. It wasn't, you know, like a big square or anything where you could take an overhead view of how many people were there. It was sort of in a little plaza with streets all surrounding, packed with people, and people packed onto mountainsides on the other side of the airport, and people packed onto rooftops and everything. So it was very difficult to gauge how many people were there, but, you know, definitely more, at least, you know, a couple hundred thousand. The press that routinely either ignores the resistance movement or, you know, calls them vandals or, you know, vagos, nangaras. There's a bunch of words in the Honduran Spanish for it. And, you know, they routinely insult them, said there was, you know, between 2,000 or 3,000 people there. The resistance press said there was at least 1,000,000. You know, I would say probably a couple hundred thousand. Anyways, regardless, most people agreed it was the biggest gathering of people in the history of Honduras, which is a, you know, relatively small country. The city of Tegucigalpa only has a population of 800,000 people. So if you can imagine 200,000 people being at the airport, it's pretty powerful. And, you know, most people on the whole were just really excited to see this. And really, it represented, you know, the first victory of the resistance movement. Because you can imagine that if it wasn't for the resistance movement, Honduras would already be back in the OAS. If it wasn't for the resistance movement, you know, being there day after day after day, putting pressure on the regime and showing the world, and being repressed and showing the world the reality of what's going on, then, you know, the Honduras would have already been back in the U.S. They wouldn't have had to let Zelaya back in the country. Zelaya would still be in exile. And so it was celebrated as a victory. At the same token, you know, for some of the reasons I laid out earlier, you know, some people thought that maybe the deal went too far. You know, maybe they didn't have to, maybe they should have been able to get the lie back without having to go back into the OAS, you know, and various other things. But on the whole, it was definitely a day of celebration, but also a day of question marks as to people wondering what's going to be Zelaya's role in the country now, with the biggest question really being, you know, is he going to be the traditional leader that Hondurans have had, you know, some people call Caudillo, which is kind of weird because I think those kinds of leaders exist in all countries, not just in Latin American countries. But to be a leader who sort of, you know, takes on the messiah role of, you know, I will deliver you this and I will deliver you that, and making a bunch of promises and having a real personality-based resistance movement, or whether or not he's going to be the leader that he was before he left, for the most part, in promising a more participatory democracy and promising to be the leader of a more collective leadership. And I think that's the real split in the resistance, is the people that see Zelaya as the only leader that's ever looked out for their interests, looked out for the interests of the poor majority, and see him as, you know, kind of a quasi-divine leader who, you know, is the only person fit to lead them, and the other part of the resistance that wants a more participatory democracy and sees that as a potential threat, Zelaya's popularity. So, you know, that's the real division in the resistance movement, I would say.
You mentioned the violence against the farmers and the assassinations. Have we seen a decrease in this kind of activity since Zelaya has returned to Honduras?
Just in the past week, there's been 3 more campesinos assassinated in the Aguan area and 2 kidnapped. And as far as my information is today, we still don't know, you know, where they are. The 2 days after the accord, there were students on strike. Students walked out of their classes and occupied their high school. And the military and police went in and fired live ammunition. Thankfully, none of the children were killed, but they also fired tear gas into the high school itself, which explicitly, under, you know, various international accords for the use of tear gas, you're not supposed to fire into buildings. But they fired into the students. The students were protesting because many of their teachers had been fired for participating in anti-regime protests. Particularly for participating in the teacher strike that took place throughout the whole month of March. And so this was the reaction of the students, and this is what they got. And this was, you know, within 48 hours of Pepe Lobo signing the accord with Zelaya. So, you know, people and the human rights defenders are pretty much across the board in agreement that in the long run, the frequency of human rights abuses is actually going to increase, because Honduras no longer has any incentive to look good internationally on that level, especially when you have precedents in the area of countries like Colombia that have gotten away, you know, with mass massacres without, you know, with clear ties to the government, without having any repercussions in terms of the OAS or in terms of, you know, various other ways the international community could have punished them. So now, you know, people are really afraid that Honduras is headed down that sort of Colombian path. And so, you know, ever since we've seen, like I said, we've seen a few more assassinations. I think it's still a little too early. I think, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens once all the international attention is removed from Honduras again, because there's still a little bit of eyes on Honduras due to Zelaya's return. And I think in the next months, we'll we'll get a chance to see, you know, what Honduras' future is going to look like in terms of the rights and freedoms of the people here.
Well, thanks so much, Jesse, for joining us and for reporting from Honduras.
My pleasure, Sean. Thanks for your interest.
I've been speaking with Jesse Freestan in Honduras. Jesse is an independent video journalist who recently filed from Honduras a series of mini docs for The Real News Network. You can find those docs at therealnews.com.